Following was recorded in someone's basement. Welcome to the Pro Wrestling Outsider Show, The Pro Show! With your hosts, Kyle Joseph and Mark Cote. Take it away, guys! Hey everyone, I'm Kyle, and this is the Pro Wrestling Outsiders Show. I am in the studio today, all by my lonesome. Schedules are schedules. This one's on me. Again, my apologies, but we'll get back together as soon as we can. Mark will come up later on in the show. Today we're going to talk SmackDown, we're going to talk some Raw, we're going to break down Hell in the Cell, and Mark is going to cover some NXT and AEW. So stay tuned, we will be back, and hopefully next week we'll be able to get our draft going, because Mark and I are both looking forward to it. And it's just one of those things, we really want to be together, because we want to be able to go back and forth and talk about our picks and curse each other when we take the pick they really wanted. So hopefully next week we'll get that done. It'll be after the actual draft, which is coming up this Friday, October the 11th, but it is what it is. So stay tuned. We will be back, or rather, I'll be back, and then Mark will be joining us later. So stay tuned. She'll never fall in love. Hey everyone, thanks very much for hanging tight. This is Kyle once again here in the formerly known as 613 Wrestling Studio, now the PWO Studio. So, just wanted to share my thoughts on SmackDown and its season opener from and their partnership with Fox. I know it's been almost a week now. It is the way it is, unfortunately, with SmackDown moving to Fridays. Things get a little haywire, but we'll do the best we can to try and cover as much as we can. So I just wanted to kind of go over, share my thoughts on the whole first time out with Fox and everything like that. So first of all, I thought it was really great that Fox is really trying to introduce WWE into its kind of its own universe. They had a lot of partnership with their existing talents, getting involved in the 24/7 championship, having them on interviews, having them on their television shows. I think it's really important because this is an opportunity for WWE to really even increase their audience even more as the wrestlers become, once again, more like Hulk Hogan and, to some extent, Stone Cold, where you didn't have to be a wrestling fan to know who these people were. So I think it's a really great idea. I did like the blue carpet they roll out they had. All the people that came out there and doing the interviews and really making a show of it. So I thought that was really fantastic. then we got into the lead-in of the show. So obviously new graphics, new theme, very Fox, which some people may not really like. It's not necessarily my cup of tea, but I understand it. It was very much around the way that Fox operates their football and anything else. And I like that they've incorporated wrestling the same way. You want to legitimize it as a quote-unquote sport, you got to present it that way. And I think this is a good first step of matching their music and their graphics to fit the rest of the way that Fox runs their sports programs. Then we get to the stage, and I really dug it. I like that it was completely different than Raw. So USA Network has their own image, their own show that they can do things with them, and then Fox has their own. The brackets on the outside were very much like Fox. I think they worked really well with the entrance music and the entrance visuals. It really enhanced it, but it was definitely a unique look, which I I really enjoyed. I think, you know, Mark had said this before, that they really nailed this one. And I agree. They hit this one out of the park, both on Raw and on SmackDown. Side note, we'll talk about it later when it comes to Natalya and Lacey Evans at Hell in a Cell. But I did like the fact that a couple of times Natalya this week got thrown up on the Raw stage, that she's ended up sliding back down the curve, and I thought that was I liked it. It was funny. So let's get on to the show. We had The Rock. He came out. No surprise there. We'd already heard he was coming. Obviously, he wasn't going to be getting in a match. You know, he's got himself to protect. He's got his own things going on that he has to be very careful with. Him and Becky going at it with Baron Corbin. Again, I think that Baron Corbin is the best heel in WWE. Pure heel. Everyone hates him. And you're supposed to hate him. No one loves Baron Corbin. Nobody plays both sides with Baron Corbin. The things he says, people hate. The things he does, people hate. And this was actually, despite how kind of, for lack of a better term, hokey this was, I felt like this was really a good segment. And I'm sure that Baron Corbin must have been trying so hard not to bust a smile with all the different various jokes or the various other things that were going on. I think everyone had a good fun with it. So it was nice to see. We had some good matches in here. We had Becky Lynch and Charlotte Flair defeating Bayley and Sasha, which was their lead-in to, which was not announced, but the lead into the Hell in the Cell for Charlotte and Bayley. I liked how they incorporated, you know, some other celebrities or non-wrestling people into the show. Tyson Fury being one of them, which we find out on Raw this week. He's going to have a little bit more of a bigger presence, I guess. So they're going to do something with it, and I'm really okay with it. I think it really, the more they continue to do this cross promotional stuff, I think it benefits both WWE and whomever it is that's participating. A side note, apparently Kevin Smith and Jason Mewes were supposed to be appearing on SmackDown, but when they showed up on Dynamite, WWE pulled the plug. I get it. It's tough to really say what the right way to do things is. You know, I think WWE's got to protect themselves as best as they can. We had a lumberjack match, Roman Reigns and Eric Rowan. Roman Reigns winning. This is also leading into their Hell in the Cell match. You know, I mean, lumberjack matches are what they are. They're not necessarily my cup of tea. But, again, it's helped set up this pay-per-view, which was really a bizarre one because we didn't really have a lot of lead-in time and a lot of matches announced prior to. But we'll get to that when I talk about Hell in a Cell in general. And then lastly, we had two bigger things. And the first was Kevin Owens and Shane McMahon in a ladder match, and the loser gets fired. And I will tell you, this was a really good match. I thought that they utilized all of the tools they had. They sold a great story. Shane got in his stuff. He was actually effective. Kevin Owens doing the frog splash onto the ladder, you know, that was pretty ballsy, and everyone was definitely digging it. I'm happy that Kevin Owens won. It makes all the sense in the world. Shane can go back and do his, you know, whatever else he's responsible for, or any of his side businesses, and WWE can move forward. I know that whether it was in the pre-show or it was in interviewing the blue carpet, Paige was half joking, I think, that she hopes that Kevin Owens wins so that maybe she can get her job back. I think that there is something to be said for the GM role, as long as it's done properly. And I think both Daniel Bryan and Paige have done that role correctly. So I wouldn't be complaining if Paige came back, especially that she's not really part of the Kabuki Warriors. I would like to see her back. And lastly, we had the WWE Championship match, Brock Lesnar, Kofi Kingston. Brock Lesnar winning in a squash match. I think it was like 8 seconds or something like that. And this one's really tough, and I think it really there's something to be said for both sides. Does it tarnish Kofi Kingston's run? I don't know. I think everyone can really appreciate what Kofi Kingston did as WWE champion. Kind of looking back, I think I've gained a newfound respect for what he's done with the belt and what he's endured to get there and how really his run was pretty special. It does kind of lead me to think that he's not going to be in a position to compete again for the belt. I don't know. I'm not sure what's going to happen. But at the same time, Brock Lesnar is going to be your moneymaker. He's going to be the thing that Fox needs to have in order to bring in outside audience. People outside of the wrestling business know who Brock Lesnar is. So Fox can utilize him, especially as champion, to bring that audience in. My only hope is that we don't end up like we've seen in the past, where Brock Lesnar only shows up once every 6 months. So hopefully this will be a reason for him to show up more. Big shock with Cain Velasquez. You know, I really thought that with Brock winning, we would see Rey Mysterio challenge him at Hell in a Cell. He came out with the shoulder thing. Not sure if it's real or not. If you happen to know, tweet us out, let us know. But Cain Velasquez coming out. And it was interesting because he was just wrestling in AAA. Word is that he is a free agent. So he might... He's still in talks with AEW. Obviously, him and Brock have a great storyline from real life. Cain being the one to take the belt from Brock. So it'll be interesting to see where they take the story. If they really do something with it. It's tough to say, too, because we have the draft coming up next. Next episode of SmackDown. So how much of these stories are going to carry through before we do this? Time will tell. But all in all, I think that there's a promising future for SmackDown on Fox. I am happy they're going to go and do the split. I think it's important to have them split out their brands. Hopefully it means we truly do see, continue to see the split of wrestlers and only see maybe, you know, Survivor Series that go against each other, or if there's a legitimate storyline that draws one into the other. Other than that, let's keep them separate, give everyone a chance to perform and show on their own show, and we'll see what happens. Up next, we're going to talk about Hell in the Cell, but before we do, I just wanted to give you guys the full card for C4 Underground that's taking place this Friday, October 11th, at the Beyond the Pale Brewery, and this show is a sold-out show, which is fantastic news. I think C4 is really coming into their own, and it's nice to see that even when you don't have the massive stars that come, the talent that we have here in town and in the local area can still draw. So let's just, you know, break down the matches we have and go from there. So up first on the list, we have a three-way match. Thomas LeDuc, Golden Gun Mark Wheeler, and Marino Tenaglia. That's definitely a new one for me. I'm not familiar with Marino, but I am with Mark Wheeler and Thomas LeDuc. Big fan of Mark Wheeler. I've seen him both here and, on TV on Impact, as well as at Alpha 1. So I think this one's going to be interesting. I think Mark Wheeler should come out with the win, but I don't really know who Marino is, so you never really know. Thomas LeDuc always puts in a good effort, but in this case, he usually comes up short. I think it'll happen again. Next, you have a special challenge, Puff versus Hot Stepper McCray Martin. Puff is always a fan favorite. I don't know why he doesn't love Puff. He's great with the crowd. He moves around fairly well for a guy his size. And McCray's an interesting character. I've seen him in the Keeps show that they put on after one of their wrestling academies, if you want to call it that, where he took on Josh Alexander and did fairly well, all things considered. Seen him in some other C4 events. So we'll see how this one goes. I think it's really a toss-up as to who wins this one. Up next, we have a first-time-ever match, Remix Kevin Bennett versus Young Bull Junior Benito. And I think everyone knows that Junior Benito is a fan favorite, both at C4 and at Orleans Wrestling Alliance. Really, this one could go either way. I think both these guys have a lot to offer. You're going to see some high-flying stuff in here. And again, if you have the opportunity to see Junior Benito, come out and see him while he's fresh. because he is going to go places, and he's definitely one to watch. Another first-time ever match, we have Red Death, Daniel Garcia, who did win the over-the-top Battle Royal at the C4's Fighting Back show, which means he is in the running for a C4 championship match at some point in the near future, or distant future, we'll see. He's taking on Aiden Prince. Not familiar with Aiden, so we'll see how things go. But that being said, Daniel Garcia is all heart, and he is actually fantastic to watch. Will we get another chop fest like he did against Evil Uno? Who knows, but this definitely will be a good one to come out. I think Daniel Garcia, though, he's my guy. I'll go with him in the end. Second last match on the card, we have C4 Underground's number one contender match. You know, one of the things I forgot to mention last week that I'd mentioned the previous week with regards to my season opener for C4's review. I talked about the Underground champion, Jonathan Rukin, whether he was injured or not. He was, in fact, injured. So huge props to him for fighting through everything and still wanting to put on a show for the fans. Excellent work. Crappy to hear that he's hurt, but hopefully it won't be too long before he comes back to defend his championship. So in this match, we have the unlikable Kevin Blackwood, Flying Frank Milano, Kevin Blanchard, and Holden Albright. So I am Flying Frank Milano is definitely a new one name for me. So I mean, I'd be interested to see what happens with him. I like Kevin Blackwood. I think he's got a lot to offer. You know, him being one of the Buffalo Boy brothers. And Holden Albright is just he's an interesting character. And then there's Kevin Blanchard, who I got to see the first time at the C4 show. He was very impressive as well. This one can go either way. I'm going to throw this out here and say that Kevin Blanchard for the win. And lastly, we have the Tag Memorial Tournament. This is to honor the late Terry. We have a ton of tag teams in here. We're interested to see how this all lays out, how they take on these matches. But we'll list out the participating teams. We have the ever-favorite Tabernacle team, Mathieu Saint-Jacques and Thomas Dubois. We also have Les Guerres du Ring, which is Jason Gray and Nore. We have 40 Acres, which is PB Smooth, I'm assuming like peanut butter, and Trey Lamar. Fear the Beard, which is John Kyan and Alexander Cable. Super nice guys, we like those guys. We have the Punk Rock Pussycats in Alley Cat and Jody Threat. C4 regular Fight or Flight with Von Vertigo and Gabriel Forza. Double Dragons, Pat and Eddie. And hashtag the best, Spunk and Logan Reed. This one's going to be interesting. Could go either way. I kind of feel like Tabernacle team, they are the strongest team out there. I think they'll come away with a victory. But you never know. Who knows? So, once again, that show is sold out, but it is taking place this Friday, October the 11th. At Beyond the Pale Brewery. If you know, unfortunately, I'm not able to go, and Mark wasn't either, so if you're able to go, and let us know how the show went. You know, we're excited to hear from anybody that went, and give us their opinions on it. But keep coming out to these shows, guys. You get to see lots of great local talent. We do have the next show, regular C4 show, coming on November the 29th. So more details to come with that one. But after the break, we will break down Hell in a Cell. Or rather, I will. And then Mark will share his opinions after. So once again, thanks very much for listening. And please, don't turn off this podcast. And we are back. Thanks again, everyone, for joining us. And for all of our listeners, we do really appreciate all of your time that you take to listen to us. And again, we're always looking for feedback. If there's anything we're doing well, we'd love to hear that, obviously. But if there's anything that you really get annoyed with or isn't as great, let us know and we'll do our best to change it. And, you know, again, keep engaging with us on Twitter and Instagram. We have a lot of fun. We enjoy the different discussions. And this one has definitely brought up some discussions. I had the opportunity to watch Hell in a Cell live for once, and did the whole live tweeting, which is it's challenging to say the least. You know, because you want to share your feelings, but you don't want to share too many feelings. And then you want to keep track of everything, and that and this, that, and the other. I think Mark's better at it, so he might continue to do that forward. But alas, here we go. So Hell in the Cell took place this past Sunday, October the 6th, in good old Sacramento, California. Kind of wanted to share the build a little bit, not too much, but I just felt like this pay-per-view was filled with bad timing. Clash of Champions took place September 15th, which really put us at roughly 3 weeks to come to Hell in the Cell. We also had Raw and their, I think it was their 25th anniversary show. We also had SmackDown premiering on Fox. And it just felt like we really had to miss out on proper story builds for everything but the three or four show matches they announced prior to the lead up or prior to the pre-show. So, and then we're going and we're turning around, and 3 weeks later we're going to back to Saudi Arabia for Crown Jewel. Now, I don't really have any issues with the Saudi Arabian shows. I just feel like when you're trying to cram them into the schedule when you already have your 12 pay-per-views, it really impacts everything else. And I know that there is big money to be made and big business with the Saudi Arabian shows, so you want those to be a focus, but it does impact the rest of your stories and the rest of your shows before and after. So I feel like what would be better suited is if we didn't have a Backlash or a Proving Grounds or, you know, one of these other not as marquee shows, and then just go to Saudi Arabia. So you still have your proper 4 week build up to the show in Saudi Arabia, and then you have a proper 4 week build up to the next pay-per-view. I think it gives them a chance to really build out these stories and build out these matches and build the anticipation. It's the one thing that I think, other than, realistically speaking, other than the Seth and Bray match, the rest of them didn't quite have as much anticipation behind them. I think with Bray it's a bit of an exception because it was more like, well, what are they going to do with this? But in the end, we only had four matches going in, and then they threw in some other matches. And when you look at the card, some of these matches, and I know that they've talked about this on 83 Weeks and Something to Wrestle With, when they have, I don't know what they call them, if they call them television matches or they call them whatever they call them, but essentially they're matches that don't really need to be on a pay-per-view. They could be done on any other regular Raw or SmackDown, and we did have some of these matches in here, which I think is unfortunate, but I think that's part of the problem, was that they had a lot of other things going on that really, we have Hell in the Cell because it's the regular October pay-per-view. And then we can move on to the next one. So maybe we didn't need a Hell in the Cell. Maybe all these stories carry into Crown Jewel, and we have Crown Jewel next Sunday instead. And that way, you know, we get a proper build-up. But alas, this is what it is. So I'm going to break down the matches, and we're going to go from there. It won't take too long. You guys got stuff to do, and Mark still has, you know, things he wants to share, and we'll get on with it. So up first, the one and only pre-show match was Natalya and Lacey Evans in a submission match, or sorry, in a regular match that Natalya won by submission. Like I tweeted out, I think this was really unfortunate because this was a showcase for Lacey Evans. She looked incredibly strong, and again on Raw this week, she looked incredibly strong, and then she loses to Natalya in kind of a lackluster way. You know, she's doing everything. In the match on at Hell in a Cell, she did the interesting, you know, hop up moonsault and missed the mark, and then Natalya was able to get up and put her in a sharpshooter, and that was the end of it. I can't complain about the time, 9 minutes 25 seconds. The match was solid, it's just that unfortunately the ending I found didn't benefit Lacey when it should have. Again, like Baron Corbin, Lacey Evans, despite what people may think about her in-ring skill, she's an excellent heel. She plays the part really well. You love to hate her, and that's the job. There's nobody there that's like, yeah, really cheering for Lacey Evans. They want to see her lose, and so it works really well. During the pre-show, we had a couple of confrontations. We got a show. Randy Orton and Ali match was announced. They had announced Kabuki Warriors versus Alexa Bliss and Nikki Cross. We also had Charlotte Flair and Bayley being announced. So it was just kind of weird. And then a couple other matches were put in that we didn't really know about, or at least while watching. They may be announced on WWE.com or somewhere else, but alas, it was a surprise. So to start the show, we had, I think, the best match of the night. Becky Lynch, Sasha Banks, in a Hell in a Cell match. They did a phenomenal job. They went 21 minutes, the longest match of the night, but it was not 21 minutes. That felt like 21 minutes. These ladies went back and forth. They had some really creative spots when Becky Lynch managed to prop the chair up with the kendo sticks and then did the drop kick off the side of the ring to hit Sasha was fantastic. They went back and forth. I was a bit concerned at the start of the show because they started it like Sasha Banks and Charlotte's match the last time they were in Hell in a Cell, where the cell didn't go all the way down yet and they started wrestling on the outside. But luckily they brought it back in rather quickly and they were off to the races. Hands down, my favorite show match of the night. One of my favorite matches in the last couple of pay-per-views. I really did enjoy this one. I think they both came out looking strong. I think that they really pair up well with each other. They have very similar wrestling styles without kind of stealing each other's moves. So it was really enjoyable to watch. Again, Becky wins by submission. In all honesty, had Becky lost, I don't think it would have necessarily hurt her. But it certainly doesn't hurt Sasha as a result of her losing as well. So I think it's a win for everybody. Up next, we had the tornado tag. This is the storyline that has really, I think, faltered. But we're at this point now. We have Daniel Bryan and Roman Reigns taking on Eric Rowan and Luke Harper. The question Mark brought up, and you know, you also start to wonder, is Daniel going to turn on Roman during the match or after the match or before the match to show he's really, you know, the bad guy that he's been before? Daniel and Roman win. I kind of figured that was going to happen. The match was okay. I'm not a huge fan of Eric Rowan. I do like Luke Harper. I would love to see Luke Harper with a new look and maybe a new something going on, because I think he's really good in the ring. But he still looks like he's one of the Wyatt family, and until he gets rid of that look, I think people are going to get stuck in that mentality. End of the match, we had this really weird, awkward thing where Daniel Bryan was trying to hype up, and you know, you're building anticipation, is he going to turn on him, is he going to turn on him, and then they hug it out, and then he leaves, and it just felt like it was missing some bite, I don't know, it just, when you have this thing where somebody's trying to kill Roman Reigns and smash him with a car and all this other stuff, and then it just kind of ends like this, it just felt really flat for me. After that match, during the conversation, the pre-show, this is one of those kind of matches that could have taken place on any other television show. Randy Orton taking on Ali. This was a great match for Ali. Another great match for Randy Orton. It shows that Randy Orton is always in contention to be a main eventer. One of the best reversals or avoidances or whatever you want to call it by Ali. Randy Orton goes to give him the RKO. He does kind of a handstand thing to flip back out, which was fantastic. Everyone was certainly in awe of what Ali had done. It reminds people that Ali is going to be something special in the future. They just need to figure out how to get him there. And then he does this, what looked to be kind of like an, I'm assuming he went to do a rollout DDT, you know, dives through the ropes to come back in the ring, flips up, and gets RKO'd. And it was a fantastic ending. I am gaining a greater and greater appreciation for the RKO in what it can offer and what it can do. I think I actually prefer the RKO over the Diamond Cutter, over the Stunner, because it is coming out of nowhere. It really can happen any time, and they've over the years have done some pretty creative things with it. So, super happy with this match. I thought it was a great match, and Randy Orton winning is great. Randy Orton losing would also be great. So, in the end, I think everyone wins. Up next, we had a pre-show announced match. Kabuki Warriors taking on Alexa Bliss and Nikki Cross for the Tag Team Championship. You know, this is one of the only real other tag teams is the Kabuki Warriors. They haven't really been much. As I stated kind of during the pay-per-view, I do miss the old Asuka, surprisingly to me, where she was dominating. I just feel like unless they do something with her, she's just another wrestler. She's not the dominating destroyer of everybody else that she was before, and I miss that. But bring out the green mist, take the win. Interesting to see how they carry this, you know, the Kabuki Warriors in this quote-unquote heel turn, how they're going to carry this through. I think that this is, though, a good rivalry to go back and forth for a little bit. I don't think anybody's going to complain here. I'm just not too sure what's going to happen with the Women's Tag Team Championship. When the brand split happens, is this one that carries through, or is this going to stay on one show versus another? All right. Up next, we have the Viking Raiders and a surprise opponent taking on the OC. So we know the mystery partner, you know, I think a lot of people thought it was Cedric Alexander for like the 19th time. Braun Strowman comes out, nice surprise. No real rhyme or reason why he's decided to be the partner. This match was going well, and I think that the OC and the Viking Raiders match well together. They put on good shows, and then it ends in another disqualification. And it's frustrating because this is probably the third disqualification we've had with these guys. We don't see an end in sight, but they're not really gaining anything. They just seem to be like, hey, we need to get the Viking Raiders out there, and we haven't really had anybody new, so let's put them against the OC again. So hopefully, down the line, we'll have, you know, maybe a no DQ match, put them in a steel cage, something that kind of ends this rivalry or ends this storyline properly, so we can actually get once and for all who's the better tag team. Another one of these television matches, Chad Gable and King Corbin. While I love Corbin, the King part is always iffy with me, but why do we have this match for the third time? Do we really need it? Chad Gable comes out with the win. They go backstage. He then gets demoed by Corbin, which means that we're going to have another match with these two. I prefer Chad Gable with the long hair and the singlet. I really actually grew to miss him and Jason Jordan together. I think there was a chance before they went down the Kurt Angle route to really have them as these premier athletes, better than all of these other tag teams because they're more athletic and they're younger and all this other stuff, and they just kind of went a different direction. I know we're probably never going to see Jason Jordan back. It's just too bad. I don't need to see Chad Gable and Baron Corbin another match. Second to last match of the night, Charlotte Flair taking on Bayley. This was another solid match. I think these two women tell a very good story together in the ring. You really weren't sure who was going to come out on top. In the end, Charlotte Flair wins, and Bayley has a bit of a meltdown, and I think it was great. I actually thought it was perfect, because it really shows how important this belt was to her and how devastated she was. I'm hoping it means that she will, you know, do whatever it takes to get the belt back, you know, lie, cheat, and steal a la Eddie Guerrero, whatever the case may be. I also hope it changes some of her look. Get rid of the wacky waving inflatable tube men or Bailey buddies or whatever they're called. So, you know, just so she can add a little more edge to her and kind of fit a little bit more in line with Sasha Banks. Not all the way, but enough to be like, okay, so you've gone ahead and hit somebody with a chair. You're a new person. Let's get a little more attitude in you. Again, this was a really enjoyable match. I think this was really well done. I was a bit concerned that we're having this match again, but I was certainly surprised. And anxious to see what happens with Charlotte Flair going down the road. Last match of the night. This one, I think, is really... This one is going to cause some arguments. This one is going to cause some discussion. Mark and I had a bit of a chat beforehand. I know he's watched it again, and I think he's maybe changed his tune a little. I was disappointed in this match, but I don't think it's for the reasons that people assume it is. I did find the red lighting very distracting, as well as the change in kind of camera style. I get that you're trying to create this frantic, chaotic environment, but I found it really hard to follow along. It became my focal point, and instead of on Seth and Bray. I will tell you, I thought the actual in-ring work was great. It got a little frightening at times because they were really pulling all the stops. I think it showed the power that Bray has, where he gets back up. Curb stomp after curb stomp after curb stomp. It got a little repetitive. I think that maybe Seth should have gone to another avenue at some point in time, but hey, what do I know? I don't wrestle. I didn't like the ending. It's not even about them not having a victor in the end. The match stoppage was so odd to have back-to-back years of match stoppages for Hell in a Cell where there's supposed to be no rules. I thought there was things that they could have done more creatively with this character in this match. We're still unsure of, you know, what's going to happen down the road. I know that after the match was over, Bray attacked Seth. I felt like there was opportunities that they could have really done something cool with it. Had they had Bray Wyatt in the match, first of all, get rid of the red lights. Just have the match normally. But then all of a sudden the lights go out. Lights come back on. It's a different Bray Wyatt. Or it's more than one Bray Wyatt. So you have a different fiend. He's a completely different fiend. He's a different size. He's a different whatever. Lights go out. Lights come back on. Now there's two fiends. Or three fiends. Or four fiends. They're attacking. Seth's fighting them off. Lights go out again. Lights come back on, it's regular Bray again. They go back to the match, lights go out. Lights come back on, it's a big fiend, like a Braun Strowman-sized fiend. Just starts tuning Seth. But again, he's fighting back, he's not giving up. And then, you know, lights go out again, lights come back on. It's another guy that looks like the fiend. Same size, same look. Seth finally defeats him. Rips off the mask. It's not him. Somebody completely different. Then Bray pops up and chokes him out, whatever the case may be. That, I feel like, could have been done more. This became really frantic and chaotic. The crowd was booing it beyond recognition. It was a tough spot for Seth because people wanted Bray to win. That's the reality of it. Whenever Bray was at a chance to winning, the crowd was behind it. As soon as Seth started fighting back, they lost the crowd. It's a tough call, I get it, but there's a lot of boo birds out there, and to have a match stoppage at the end again, it's really tough to sell. We'll see what happens with Crown Jewel. Are we going to carry these stories through to Crown Jewel, or is this Crown Jewel going to be one of these showcases again where it's totally different matches and it doesn't really have anything carrying through? Time will tell. So I think that wraps it up for me in terms of my Hell in the Cell. Again, if you haven't watched it yet, at the very, very least, watch the Becky Sasha match. It's fantastic. It's phenomenal. Charlotte Flair and Bayley was great. Randy Orton and Ali was great. There's definitely some good matches in there. There's some okay matches. There's some questionable matches. Not the best pay-per-view of the year so far. Not the worst. But we shall see where things go. So that's it for me. Thanks very much, everyone, for listening to me talk all by myself. And after the break, Mark will be on the air spouting his rhymes. Once again, my name is Kyle. Thank you so much for listening. We always appreciate everything. This wraps it up for me. Until next time. To make her dizzy, staring at these lines like, who the fuck is he? She hates when it comes up. She's always feeling dumb when they leave, and she's left with none. And her friends pretend that there might be one out there. She doesn't need it, she doesn't see it. She's defeated, deflated. L-O-V-E is... What is going on, everyone? Mark here from the PWO show. Thank you, Kyle, for that great recap of Hell in a Cell, SmackDown. And all that was in wrestling over the last week. So, of course, as you know by now, if you're listening this far in, Kyle and I weren't able to get together this week, but I wanted to kind of still go over some of my opinions over this past week of wrestling. I don't want to go as in-depth as Kyle did in certain things, because I don't want it to be the exact same thing you guys just heard on the first half, but I want to give some highlights for last week's Friday Night SmackDown debut on Fox, Hell in a Cell, and I did catch AEW's second show on TNT Dynamite, which I will review as well. But first and foremost, let's kind of go back. Last Friday, SmackDown Fox debut was great. And you know, I know when you guys hear me talk about ratings and everything else, ratings should not be something we always focus on, and I still stand by that. So I don't want in mind what I'm about to say contradict anything that I've said in the past, where I'm only going to talk about ratings positively when they're good or negatively when they're bad, to seem like they don't matter. But I'm very proud with WWE achieving, you know, almost a 4 million rating. I think it was 3.91, I believe the end rating was. And if I got this right, and maybe I'm wrong, but I believe that the rating does not include PVR. And that's a big thing. PVR is the new... you know, the new age. And of course it doesn't count anyone streaming or watching it otherwise. So I think that 4 number is pretty darn impressive considering. And I thought that was a heck of a way to kick off their debut show on Fox. We had some pretty cool highlights overall, some big memorable ones for me. Of course, we had The Rock coming back. And I think The Rock, and what a lot of people did really, really good, was not just act like everyone is supposed to know who everyone is. You know, The Rock was very much putting over Becky Lynch as the heel. Sorry, babyface. And Baron Corbin as the heel. Of course, Baron's got a new catchphrase. Or a new name, a new chant, an STD. Super tough dude. Poor guy. Sometimes that stuff can stick with you. Just like STDs. Heyo. Anyways. But no, so I thought that was really interesting, you know. It wasn't too overpowering. It was a nice little segment. You know, SmackDown, you know, one of the shows that The Rock helped build. You know, lay the SmackDown on your candy ass, you know, way back 20 plus years ago. So it was cool to see him there. And he looks in great shape as well. Plus to see him hit a little rock bottom, a couple punches. It's all I need out of The Rock. So that was super, super cool. As well, of course, other highlights. We saw the long storyline come to an end. I'm excited tomorrow to see where else they're going to go, if anything. But of course, Shane McMahon is fired. Kevin Owens defeated him in that brutal ladder match. They really put it all out. And it almost seemed if that was Shane McMahon's last match for at least a foreseeable future, he really put his body out on the line. You know, those power bombs onto the ladders and everything that they did. You know, crazy, crazy, crazy match, you know. Very, very happy that Kevin Owens won. He's back in the company, doesn't get that $100,000 fine. But more importantly, Shane goes away for a bit, which I think is going to be really good for Shane as a character, as well as just giving more TV time to the other people. And makes Kevin Owens the ultimate babyface right now, which is pretty, pretty cool. So I know Kyle wasn't so very keen on the whole Kevin Owens thing, thinking that it kind of went too long and maybe, you know, ran its course. But we kind of got the ending where
that we were kind of hoped for, if anything else. So what a way to do so on the debut episode of Fox. Of course, we had Roman and Rowan going at it and really kind of building towards their Hell in a Cell match when it comes Daniel Bryan and Roman versus Harper and Rowan. That's a mouthful to say. We, of course, also had a little bit more of build with Seth versus Bray at Hell in a Cell. Braun and Tyson Fury kind of started a little bit of a hoopla, you know, that was going to kind of lead into this week where, by the looks of it, they're, you know, we're not, this is not unfamiliar territories. We've seen this with many stars. We've seen this with Floyd Mayweather, Mike Tyson, and Tyson Fury not only is very well known in the boxing world, but he's very tough. And of course, Braun Strowman, you know, the monster among men, get these hands. So it's very, very cool. And for those people online saying, oh my God, celebrities or other boxers, you know, don't belong in WWE. Listen, they've been there since the beginning of time. You know, the rock and roll era, you know, the movie star era. We've seen them all come 70s, 80s, 90s, you know, since the beginning of time. So, you know, adding in other types of sports, other types of entertainment and athletes and superstars and other realms into WWE, I always find this pretty, pretty cool. Especially Tyson Fury. If you haven't watched Tyson Fury, go YouTube. Guy's a scary, scary man. So, but of course, without a shadow of a doubt, the biggest thing on SmackDown that everyone was talking about was the main event. Kofi Kingston losing the Dream, losing the title to Brock Lesnar mere seconds after the bell rang. Very interesting to see where they go with this. I know why they did it. I don't like that they did it. But I understand they did it to, you know, to create a shock. You know, to create a moment, to create buzz and something to talk about. And if you're, if you're tuning into WWE after a long time not watching, or maybe the first time ever, you're seeing Brock Lesnar manhandle someone. Brock Lesnar's had a tough go over the last year. Yes, manhandling people, but losing clean to Seth Rollins, and last year with Goldberg, and, you know, so I think WWE, now that they're on more mainstream television, in order to help Brock Lesnar look like the beast and someone completely unstoppable, he needs to be running through people. Not saying I agree with it, but I can kind of understand their philosophy. It really sucks that Kofi needed to be the one that kind of needed to be the person to be put in that position. And if anything, too, I think what's cool is now you kind of open up a story. I would much rather see Kofi defeat Brock or someone else for the title than see him defend it. And I think Kofi plays a really good underdog story all throughout since Mania, all the gauntlet matches, the grudge matches, the McMahons really, you know, especially Vince putting it to him that he doesn't belong. He's 10 years too late. And, you know, defeating Orton, defeating Rusev, defeating Styles, defeating just a plethora of individuals that Kofi has gone through over the last several months. I think it's been a pretty good run, you know, for Kofi. However, I think you need to utilize almost like we did with Daniel Bryan a few years ago, where I think Kofi does very, very well as the underdog. So to watch Kofi chase again, for him to prove this wasn't a one-time thing, this wasn't a fluke, I can do it again. I think that's a pretty cool story that the fans can get behind, and I know I can get behind it. So, but of course, that big dominance led to the ending. Rey Mysterio's music hit for a quick second, and I'm sure everyone thought Rey Mysterio and Dominic were walking down, and I'm like, oh wow, that's Dom. Wow, look how big Dom is. But no, it was UFC fighter, former UFC champion, the man that defeated Brock Lesnar, you know, almost 10 years ago at UFC 121 in a first round TKO by punches knockout, Cain Velasquez. I'm a huge UFC fan, so seeing that was pretty big for me. It'll be interesting to see how they do this. You know, Kane's very new to wrestling. Will he transition as well as Ronda, Brock, Kurt Angle, amongst all the other athletes that did something outside of WWE, or Matt Riddle, you know, former UFC fighter. But very interesting. Clearly, you know, they're going towards a Cain Velasquez-Brock Lesnar match. I don't know if there's going to be a title implication or whatnot, but we'll find out more tomorrow. However, in order to make it seem like Brock, you know, is up to the challenge, you need to make him look strong. So, once again, goes back to my I don't like it that they did that to Kofi, but I kind of understand what they were trying to accomplish and what they were trying to build, you know, in retrospect. So, but no, and plus, you know, hey, you know, with wrestling, I know we hate talking about real life fake or whatever, but in real life, you know, in real fighting, Cain Velasquez manhandled Brock Lesnar back in 2010. So you got a story here. It's a story that kind of breeds itself. You know, Brock wanting to prove himself against the man that beat him in the octagon. And Cain wanting to say, hey, I'm now in your world. Let's go. While Brock can also say, hey, you're now in my world. Bring it on. I really hope that Cain is really, you know, at the performance center. Someone is with him to really hone that craft. Because I almost feel that if he's not ready in a match versus Brock, Brock does a really, really good job at selling for people. But Cain can end up looking very sloppy, because you could say what you want about Brock Lesnar, but Brock Lesnar doesn't have bad matches. You know, he dominates. He's really good, you know, both offensively and selling and everything else. But we'll see. So that was SmackDown. That brought us to the last show going into Hell in a Cell. And Hell in a Cell, like me and Kyle talked about in studio last week, was very, very slim. You know, we only necessarily at the time, we had 3 matches announced. There ended up being 8 matches in total, but what we did know, we knew we had Becky versus Sasha and Hell in a Cell, Roman and Daniel Bryan versus Harper and Rowan, and Seth versus The Fiend in Hell in a Cell. What we ended up getting as well was Natalya versus Lacey, where Natalya did win that match. Decent little match, I'm going to tell you. Natalya's kind of getting a different groove back, and, you know, Lacey's, you know, excellent as well. And I really like how they're building. It even kind of trickled over into Monday Night Raw with their last woman standing match. But hey, I'm really happy too that they're not quick building Lacey. It's a slow build because she's losing to Natalya, to show the gritty vet, you know, some versus someone that's new. Really, really well done. Of course, we also saw Randy Orton versus Ali. Randy Orton defeating Ali. Once again, I thought that was a great position for Ali to be in, because not only did he look good against Orton, but Orton winning was kind of my mentality the last couple of weeks with Cedric Alexander and AJ Styles, where you want these people, Buddy Murphy, Ali, you know, Cedric, you want these people to come up and rise, but you can't do it too quick. You know, it makes sense that Orton, multiple time, like one of, like, top 5 holding WWE champions of all time, you know, like, just first ballot Hall of Famer when he retires, a guy that has been so consistent, you know, over almost 20 years. You know, it makes sense that Orton would win, and how Ali is still looking to prove himself. So I would love to see him, Ali, to continue to face people like Orton and other, you know, great vets. But eventually, as we're seeing with Cedric, every time they're in the ring, they're a little better. They're a little better. They're a little better. If anything, if Kofi's not going to be in the title picture, one thing that I think would be really, really cool would be have Ali attack Kofi. And maybe Kofi is like, well, what are you doing? Like, why are you attacking me? We're both like, he's not going to say this, but they're both baby faces. And then Ali goes, you took everything from me. Since then, I can hardly win a match for the life of me. You took everything from me. Now, I'm taking it back. You know, and I need to show that, you know, you did all this at WrestleMania. I need to show that I can take you out. You know, and I think that would be really good, because it's a story that tells itself. Everything's laid there, and it would be something good in between while everything else gets sorted out around them. Of course, we saw new women's tag team champions in Asuka and Kairi Sane defeating Nikki Cross and Alexa Bliss. I love the name Kabuki Warriors. That's so cool. Very Kabuki-ish. Sounds like something the American Dream would have given their name. You know, like the Kabuki Warrior. That's a really bad. Sorry, I'm all stuffed up, so I shouldn't be doing impersonations right now. But yeah, I think they'd be really cool. But no, great match overall. And, you know, Nikki and Alexa have been fantastic champions. They've really risen that title to something more than what Bayley, Sasha, and the Iconics were able to do. So I'm really excited to see that. Hopefully more focus is put on the tag team division for the females. Especially, too, I hope they have more tag team matches that are not involved, you know, with the tag team championship. Because it seems that only when women's tag team matches are happening is when the titles are being defended. So I really hope with the brand split coming up that they are able to separate that. Of course, we saw Chad Gable defeating King Corbin. Corbin very much on his high horse saying, hey, there's a reason I beat you. A lot of short jokes and everything else. Gable got his, you know, was able to, you know, really a beautiful little story of, you know, the underdog versus the big bully. You know, David versus Goliath. Chad Gable, great, great, great athlete. And I really hope that he can continue to, once again, another guy that can, Daniel Bryan, Kofi, can utilize that underdog mentality and grow something so much more. And of course, we did get Charlotte versus Bayley for the SmackDown Women's Championship, where Charlotte did defeat Bayley and new champion. I think it was her 10th time being a women's champion. That's a lot of championships in a small period of time, but hey, whatever, you got to roll with it, I guess. You got to catch her up to her father. But no, and I really appreciated afterwards how, you know, simple of a continued vulnerability build, or how vulnerable they made Bayley look, where she just kind of sat there very defeated going, why does this always happen to me? You know, like why whenever I'm the champion, I can't just like, why, who knows? And I really hope she runs with that, because I think it's, once again, sympathy card, and whether or not Bayley wants to try to go back as a face and she wants to grow sympathy, or if she wants to continue as a heel. Once again, a complaining heel is a great heel, because it's easy to boo at someone that complains, why am I not the champion? Why don't I get what I want and everything else? So we had these matches, and of course, big ones. We saw Roman and Daniel Bryan defeat Harper and Rowan. Pretty good little tag team match, I'll tell you. It's great seeing Harper back. Rowan and Harper together, no matter what, they dominate. They just tear everything down. And they did that night, on Sunday night in Hell in a Cell. Really looked bad for Daniel Bryan and Roman Reigns, but they came back. They overcame. They won. And of course, it looked like a little shades of some babyface Daniel Bryan coming back, where no handshake, wants a hug, you know, Roman kind of laughing, and the audience is giving the yes, and, you know, you can tell, like, because Daniel Bryan has not been doing the yes, and I like that, because by not doing it and pandering to the crowd and doing it with the crowd, you could tell even, yes, I know Kyle was very big on a really big missed opportunity with Daniel Bryan being a heel, and I agree, I completely agree. However, let's be honest, Daniel Bryan as a underdog babyface, people love. That, you know, that music hits, he comes out, you know, big old eyes closed, face in the air, you know, two fingers pointed up and just lifting those shoulders and arms and doing the yes movement, doing the yes chant, and people get behind it, and, you know, and you can tell where the fans are doing the yes and he's not doing it, because it kind of makes you think, like, well, where is he? What's Daniel thinking? He's not doing the yes. Is he going to attack Roman eventually? Okay, he just hugged Roman, but is this a ruse? Or is he eventually going to do the yes again at some point? You know, it's nice being in limbo as a fan sometimes, because that's the unexpected. That's where I think a lot of us wrestling fans, you know, like to be, in that little question mark box. Of course, as well, a really, really good match. I got to tell you, Becky defending her Raw Women's Championship against Sasha Banks in a Hell in a Cell match. Phenomenal match. Those two tore it down, beat the bloody hell out of each other, and I gotta give it to them, especially two kind of kicking off the, like, not kicking off the main show, but, or kind of, I believe they did kick off the main show. And wow, set the tempo. Exactly how a Hell in a Cell needs to be built. I think that one point where, you know, Sasha was sitting up on a chair when the chair was up in the corner, up, Becky kind of, you know, running dropkick all the way to, like, just crazy. You know, like, it scares me when they put their lives on the line like that. But, you know, hats off to them. Great match. And if anything, you saw the crowd conflicted going, come on. Like, Becky's held it long enough. Give it to Sasha. Sasha has a heel holding that women's championship, being able to put it in everyone's face. But no, not yet. I think it's going to happen, but just wait a little longer, because I think fans need to learn how to wait, and they don't know how to. And that kind of leads me up where I'm going to bleed into Seth versus The Fiend. And guys, can't stress enough, I was very mixed about this match. At first I didn't like it, then I loved it, then I hated it, then I loved it. But here's the thing. Before anything else about what I feel and then the result. As a fan, a universe, crowd, whatever you want to do, I think we need to be more prone to liking or disliking what is happening, not what we want. And I hope you know what I mean by that. You know, it's kind of fans sometimes, it's like the ratings. It's like, oh, how are they going to book this? As a wrestling fan, don't worry. Watch what we're seeing and boo it or cheer it. But it was almost like fans coming into that event, coming into that match, already had it preset in their head. If The Fiend doesn't win, this is all BS. And you see people online, that wasn't booked properly, the wrong booking, the wrong winner, blah, 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 blah. I'm telling you guys, here's the thing. After watching it again, after, you know, really thinking about it, was there a missed opportunity with The Fiend being able to become the champion? Sure. But look how strong Bray became. And yes, you can say it was stupid and all that stuff and very risky, you know, the chair shot on the head on down, even though the top of the chair hit the ground and actually hit his head, and the toolbox and the sledgehammer and everything else. But once when everything was done and the referee was like, no, 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 no. Like the crowd booing because they're like, oh, that means Bray's not the champion. This sucks. Stupid Seth. No, hold on. Wait. It's The Fiend's, Bray Wyatt's second match since being back. Give it time. Give it build. Do you not think that, especially when Bray rose up and just started manhandling Seth? I was hoping the crowd, I started popping. I was like, whoa, like you can't kill him. This is crazy. And the crowd didn't care. Boo. No, no. I thought the crowd was going to erupt and go, yes. Wow, look at him go. He's still here. He's still alive. But no, it was like bullshit, BS, just all the stupid chants. Like, come on, guys. And once again, I'm not telling you guys as wrestling fans how to feel. Absolutely not. However, you know, it's one of those things where we need to, I guess, level our expectations. WWE has had a lot of ups and downs when it comes to storylines and builds and everything else. But one thing that they've always tried to concentrate on in the history of the business is building somewhere, some way, somehow. And I think we need to also give WWE time for that. I think there's so many fans that are, I want what I want, and if I don't get what I want, it's dumb, and you made a mistake. You know, it's kind of like, you know, and I get it, people do it with TV shows. Game of Thrones season finale, wow, that's dumb. This is why it's dumb. I didn't like this, this, and this. But here's the thing, no one is saying anything different. No one's saying, well, here's how I would have done it differently. Everyone's just saying, that's stupid, I didn't get what I want. Wrestling isn't about getting what we want. It's about watching something unfold. And if you guys thought that that was the one and only time Seth and Bray are going to get into the ring together, come on, guys. You know better. So that's my take, and kind of my take on you know, Becky and Sasha, where I wholeheartedly believe that Sasha's going to get hers. We just got to give it some time. Sasha's just been back for a little bit. Bray's just been back for a little bit, a little longer than Sasha, but give it time. You know, like let's look at things where, let's see where things pan out and end up. So that's my take. Friday Night SmackDown debut on Fox, Hell in a Cell, last part, and then I'm going to wrap up my little segment for this week, is of course AEW Week 2 in Boston, Mass, TNT Dynamite. So I obviously had some big opinions of last week's debut show. I was very opinionated, and I still stand by it, 100%. I just feel that with a company with, you know, the talent that they have and the wherewithal, that they can look around and not just try to be WWE light, or they doing a lot of things that are inconsistent that, you know, the fans won't like. I think, I almost feel like AEW is taking advantage of the fact that the fans will cheer no matter what. You know, there's no booing the bad guys and cheering the good guys in AEW. It's, yeah, this is AEW, yay! And good God, I'll tell you, you know, I'm kind of skipping ahead. So, well, I'll get to the complete rundown. But of course, I'm talking about Chris Jericho with Ortiz and Santana, Jake Hager and Sammy Guevara. coming out, and everyone's cheering, like, oh, we love Jericho, we love these guys, this is great. But Jericho is doing everything he can to make him, like, to make them boo him. Like, they're the heels. You know, they have deemed themselves the Inner Circle, which is a pretty cool name. That's unique, that's different. I'll tell you, I don't hate it. But I love it because they were boasting, you know, and then the crowd is like, thank you, Jericho. It's like, no. And you even saw Jericho tell him, like, shut up. Like, shut up, I don't need your thanks. You know, I don't need your aspiration. And I loved how Jericho, once again, new audience, new eyes. He didn't just go like, you guys know who these guys are. It was very much like Sammy Guevara. Like, look at this kid, $1 million. He's so young, future. You know, look at this giant, you know, Jack Hager, you know, like former world champion, baddest man in the locker room. Why? Because he's an undefeated MMA star. Not only is he a past wrestler and a current wrestler, but he's a current MMA star and he's undefeated. That means he's the toughest guy. You know, like I keep calling him LAX, but, you know, Ortiz and Santana, these dogs, these guys are crazy, you know. And, you know, it's just, you know, referencing like the list in a different way was kind of pretty cool. You know, like they're on my list. He did a really good job putting his team over as heels, where it started making me hate them, you know, and especially even when they're like, you know, oh, Jack Hager, like, we the people, you know, and it's like, we the people sucked, you know, like, stupid creative, you know, in the other business, you know, kind of got it wrong, you know, and everyone's popping, like, yeah, like, no, they, and he's trying to tell these people, shut up, you're a bunch of jerks, Dusty Rhodes is a jerk, heel heat, and I loved it, because I was booing, once when he said the Dusty comment, I was like, whoa, too far, dude, like, well, maybe not too far, but obviously Cody would have been okay with that, and Dustin, but, you know, like, whoa, like, he went there, that's crazy, like, goddamn, Jericho, man, like, get out of here, you know, he did a really good job introducing his people, his team, him, and getting that heel heat, and I thought that was great. One thing that was a little bit different was, of course, at the open of the show, we had the Young Bucks taking on Private Party. I call Private Party the Street Profits 2.0, just in my opinion. But no, it was the very first round in the AEW Tag Team Tournament for the Tag Team Championship. Roll-up pin, got the win, 20-minute match. You know, was, I don't know, it was an okay match. Very surprising and very cool to see that the Young Bucks aren't that full of themselves that they're willing to eliminate themselves in the first round. However, I will say the match was spotty. You know, very, very spotty. Too many high spots, crowd pandering, too much waiting for everything. You know, there was one point where I think Nick Jackson was literally standing there staring at the guy doing like the, right before the finishing move at Mortal Kombat, just wibbling and wobbling around. Like, just some things were just way too long. Waiting for moves. That 10-minute warning announcement, I think it was the only time it happened in the whole show. Like, 10-minute warning. It's like, okay, I don't think anyone's ever done that before. And the announcers didn't even know what the heck that was. They were even like, what was that? What does that mean, 10 minutes are left? Oh, okay, I guess we're halfway through the 20-minute duration. But once again, cool to see Private Party and that the Young Bucks are willing to make that move and move aside, because they're going to be the AEW Tag Team Champions at some point. Just, they know, they'll get heat if they just run right through it and they put the belts on themselves. So that is a smart move. So great job with that booking. But the match for me wasn't very, like, literally just flips, kicks, jumps. Too much mean face and just like just sticking tongues out. I don't know. It was just overly kooky for people that are supposed to just be like regular characters to me. Then we had one match where it was announced a little earlier within. Didn't make any sense to me, but Jimmy Havoc versus Darby Allin to determine the number one contender for the AEW Championship next week on week 3 of TNT Dynamite. Or Dynamite on TNT, sorry. And yeah, what was really weird was, you know, they tried to make it more of a wrestling match with some edgy hardcore stuff here and there. Didn't really work very well. Tried to make it a match, didn't work. Havoc had that weird promo at the beginning. Looked weird as well. You know, where he's just like, oh, I love the pain. He starts punching himself and smacking himself in the face with the camera really close. And I know, guys, I know I'm being really critical last week, this week still, I guess I'm just expressing what I like and what I don't like. And but Darby Allin did win. Darby Allin is now the new number one contender. Cody's also a number one contender, but Cody will get Jericho at, you know, I think it's called Full Gear. Sorry. But next week, Darby Allin versus Chris Jericho for the AEW Championship. And also, too, the ref. I can't remember the ref's name that was in the Jimmy Havoc Darby Allin match, but that ref was way too into it. That's the ref that I've seen do the Invisible Man match, like the Invisible Man versus the Invisible Man, where everything he does, he's always, his hands are up, and it's always like, whoa, wait. You know, if anything, like, I think he's got to tone that down because it makes it too much about him. I found a lot of the time I kept looking at the ref. And the ref, I think a really good ref, does a good job at being invisible in the ring, letting the crowd, letting the people on TV watch the people in the ring. You know, C4's referees do a really, really good job at that. You know, which is hard. You know, obviously WWE's referees and some other AEW referees do a really good job at it too. But, you know, they're not always in the way. They find a corner. You know, they're away from the front of the action. You know, so I think that ref just needs to just tone it down a little bit because, sure, you know, like, refs play a very important part in everything because they're the ones that help make the decision and keep order. However, they can't just be a little bit of a highlight. You know, they can't hold up, you know, 33% of the match as well. So then, of course, next up after that, we had a tag team match. I was kind of hoping that Rio would have maybe defended the title, or they would have, you know, number one, elaborated on what happened last week where Nyla Rose had a little bit of a hissy fit and, you know, took down, you know, Rio, you know, kind of just continued beating her up and beating everyone up, you know, beating up Michael Nakazawa and, you know, Kenny needing to come down. Unless I missed it, I saw none of that. Like, I saw no reference to that at all. But we did get Bea Priestley and Sakura versus Rio and Britt Baker in a tag match. Tiny title. And it's funny, it's a tiny title. I know we talked about it last week, but man, like, and she's a really tiny woman, and that title looks really tiny on her. So, man, that's a really tiny title. Hope they change that someday. Number one announced team, they don't need to continue. They could just call her, you know, Britt Baker or Baker or Britt. They don't need to constantly say Dr. Britt Baker, DMD. That was a little bit too much from Excalibur for me. But one thing that I do like is I want them to continue to build Bea Priestley and Britt Baker. They know each other from outside in the independents. Bea Priestley is one of my favorite independent female stars. Has been for many, many, many years. She's great. And I really think that she can better Britt Baker being in the ring with her. So I really hope that can be something on the side. And if anything, maybe build that storyline a little bit. And then eventually the winner between those two can get a shot. Who knows? But a little bit weird, you know, with Baker's hand in Sakura's mouth, you know, which JR called the mandible claw to get the win. A little bit different, where it's kind of like, you know, put her mouth in the jaw and pulled it down. That was interesting. I don't know what I think about it. I guess I don't hate it. I don't know if I like it, but it was definitely weird to see that from Britt Baker, where usually she's very, you know, she tries to be hard-hitting, but she's a clean wrestler for the most part. So a little edgy from Britt Baker, not a bad thing. But fairly okay match overall, considering. Next up, this match, crazy match. Sean Spears versus the debuting Jon Moxley. First time John's been on, or Moxley has been on an AEW TNT Dynamite show. Or Dynamite show on TNT. I gotta start saying that right. Also, we had the Bastard Pac at the table. Pac's 2-0. He's looking for a shot at the AEW Championship, so he did a really good job at kind of selling the reason why he's there, voicing the title situation and the spot and what he thinks he deserves. Good match, you know. Obviously, what ended up happening at the very end, where, you know, Moxley did win. Kenny comes to the ring holding a barbed wire broom and a barbed wire bat, and at first I thought it was a little too gimmicky, and then he threw one to Moxley, and then I was like, oh, damn. Like, these guys are going to go at it when they do. But then, of course, Pac came. Boom. Little chair in the back of Omega. You kind of thought, oh, that gives an opportunity for Moxley to take some shots. Picked up the bat and just kind of threw it down, walked away, saying, you know, Moxley being like, I don't need to, like, I'm a tough guy. I don't need to be given an opportunity like that. You know, I'll get yours. I'll get you. I'll get mine. So, but I thought that was pretty cool. Man, Sean Spears looks like $1 million. Moxley looks like $1 million. I love that Moxley's in like the MMA tight tights. And I think it's great. And, you know, Sean Spears, I'm super jealous that I missed him at the C4 event the other month that Kyle was able to attend to. A little bit of a surprise entrance there. You know, very well done for C4 for getting him in and being a secret, where obviously, as we know, secrets are hard to keep in wrestling. So, but great, great match. Then after that, of course, so really we had 1, 2, 3, 4, once again, only 5 matches on the night. Fifth match being the main event, being Dustin and Hangman taking on Sammy Guevara and Chris Jericho. You know, Hager, of course, getting involved. You know, overall, pretty good match. What the outcome, of course, was they repeated last week. You know, everyone was trying to get theirs. Everyone was trying to get back. So instead of Hager coming down and Dustin coming down, it was the Young Bucks coming down and Cody coming down and everything else. So, of course, the Inner Circle versus the Elite looks to be something that they're building, which can be very interesting. You know, but of course, after, you know, like a fairly decent brawl, I think there was about 14 minutes left in the whole show, but Hager getting involved, ref didn't do anything or say anything. The chair in the face was a little much, like kind of throwing the chair in his face. That looked like it hurt, or he either sold it really, really well. Lights went out, boom, Cody in the ring, you know, there to get his revenge on Jericho. Ortiz and Santana jumps. It's 4 versus 1. MJF comes to help Cody. It almost looks like, is he going to be... That's the big question with MJF, right? Is he on the side of Cody, or is he eventually going to stab him in the back? I still feel that MJF at some day or some point will stab Cody in the back. However, not tonight. Helped him. Boom. Just getting people out. Clearing the ring. Helping Cody out. And, you know, Young Bucks, you know, like really, it was a real babyface revenge type night. Darby Allin comes. The only thing that was a little bit weird was when Darby Allin came out on the skateboard, the little jump, little hit. Hey, if it's his thing, it's definitely unique. It's definitely different. We haven't really seen a whole lot of, in mainstream wrestling, skateboard on the ramp, down the ramp, you know, being used. I think it's a little weird thinking that someone can get cracked in the face with the trucks. The truck is the thing that's to the board and holding the wheels on. That's very hard steel. So if someone got hit in the head with that, it could probably kill them. You know, like, so I don't know how many times they need to be doing that. But no, that was your main event. You know, I think overall, you know, like the event was okay. If anything, I would definitely say it was better than the previous week. You know, this week was the better of the 2 weeks. And I know we don't have too much to compare to. So, and maybe I just have high expectations for new companies. And, you know, and maybe I shouldn't. And once again, I want to enjoy what I want to enjoy. Just there's some things where I just feel that could be better. You know, just like I'm critical with WWE, I will with AEW. Just a couple of side notes. You know, number one, JR finally got Excalibur to help out in commentary. With Sakura, just kind of being like, you know, like, let's talk to me about Sakura. Like, who is she and what is she all about? And finally, multiple time champion, these division, these companies, you know, Excalibur finally, replied and reciprocated to JR's, you know, toss ups on help me tell a story. So great job to Excalibur on that. A little bit of inconsistency with the whole picture in picture. There was one moment that I saw that picture-in-picture occurred. And then there was also moments where the match was still on, but then they were like, we're on a break. See you later. Be right back. And then, of course, just like last week with SCU, little video package, and then moved them into the ring. They did the same thing with the Best Friends, little video package, and then moved to them being downstairs, you know, down beside ringside. So that didn't really make a whole lot of sense either. But no, overall, definitely a better event. Very interesting week overall. Tomorrow we got the first day. It's Friday Night SmackDown, the second episode on Fox. We have the draft starting. That's going to go in from Friday to Monday to Raw. I'm excited to see the draft here. I'm excited to see the true brand split and see what Bischoff and Heyman can do. Ladies and gentlemen, my name is Mark. Thank you so much. If you continue to listen past Kyle's part to mine, if you have any comments on anything I said today, please hit us up at the PWO show on Twitter and all of our social media. Thank you so much, guys. Hope you have a great long weekend. If you're celebrating Thanksgiving, happy Thanksgiving. If you're not celebrating Thanksgiving, happy long weekend. Hope you have a great relaxing one, and I will see you next week. Bye.